fact, even though we're all not here, we're sort of on a time schedule. The Senate majority has a meeting at 12 o'clock, and so we'll have to leave just a few seconds before that. So anyway, this is the Senate Special Committee on World Trade, and of course we are meeting with the House Committee as well. So I'll start by introducing members of the Senate. Myself, Senator Stevens, Senator McGuire is with us, Senator Macheki, and Senator Gardner. And we may have others coming in later. We'll introduce them. Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. And thank you for joining us during our time slot. Sorry, it's kind of cozy over there. But here on the House side, we have Representative Higgins, Representative Drummond, and myself, Representative Hughes.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, let's move right on to the presentation that Greg Wolf has prepared for us. Thank you very much, Greg, for coming down. Always good to see you, and anxious to hear what you have to say.
Chairman Stevens and Madam Chair Hughes, members of the committees. Thank you for being here today. I don't know if it's a case of either deja vu or a scene from Groundhog Day, but I have been here before.
Yes.
And I was in preparing for today's meeting. I calculated this is the 15th consecutive year to have the privilege to come down and brief the legislature on what's going on in terms of international trade with Alaska. So thank you all for this opportunity. I see some old friends around the table and some new friends. And pleased to be here. I understand we do have a time constraint. There's a caucus at noon, so I'll move quickly through the presentation if that's all right with you. I was asked, because some members are new to the committee, just to mention briefly about the World Trade Center. Most of you know, perhaps, that it was established in 1987, so this is our 26th year here in Alaska. We were brought to Alaska, our franchise, by the University of Alaska. We spent the first decade as a program of the University of Alaska, and then in 1998 we transitioned to our current status, which is as a private nonprofit corporation, so with still very strong ties with the university. We are governed by an 18-member board of directors statewide, representing a variety of industries, a variety of sizes of industries, small companies, large companies, all parts of the state. Since 1998, we've enjoyed a partnership relationship with the state of Alaska. Since 2008, we've been representing the U.S. Department of Commerce in Alaska in terms of running the U.S. Export Assistance Center in Alaska, and we represent the Commerce Department on matters of trade here in Alaska. We're into the fifth year of that partnership. And since 2009, we've had a formal partnership with the University of Alaska, and that partnership continues. Overall, we have about 100 members, companies, entrepreneurs from across the state. So we're a membership organization.
Representative Hughes has a question. Mr. Wolf?
Thank you, Greg, for coming today. Question, the partnership with the state and then representing the Department of Commerce, are there federal and state funds coming with those two items?
Madam Chair, yes to both those questions. Part of that partnership with the state, we've been fortunate to receive some funding from the state each year for the past 15 years. And with the U.S. Department of Commerce, we have a contractual relationship with them that's renewed each year to provide certain services according to a work plan that's approved by both parties.
Yes, please.
The state funding amount, roughly what is that, and has that gone up or down in the 15 years?
It's gone both up and down. Our last grant was $300,000. Our request this year is for $150,000.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll continue with the presentation. I'll quickly talk about four things today: the trade numbers, the export numbers, the trends that I think that are influencing our success here in recent years, and what that portends for the future in terms of the outlook, and then a little bit more about the functions of the Trade Center. It's no secret for people here today that international trade is big business for Alaska. The full year numbers aren't in for 2012, but our estimate based on the first 9 months is that it will end up at $4.5 billion in exports to overseas markets in 2012. That number is somewhat down from the previous year. The all-time record year was 2011, when exports reached $5.2 billion. So it is down 10 or so percent, but even at it's down from a historic level. At this level, at $4.5 billion, 2012 will go on record as the second highest year all-time for Alaskan exports.
Yes. Representative Hughes?
Yes, and how would you explain that 10% decline? Do you have a reason?
Well, I think part of it comes to values. For example, values of the exports affect the total amount in terms of what happens in the course of a year. Take something like an ounce of gold. You can ship the same number of ounces this year as last year, but if you're getting $400 more an ounce this year than you did last year, you'll receive more in that category. If the prices come down, you'll receive less, even if your production remains the same. So it's a combination. Some years it's production down, some years it's value down, some years it's a combination of both. $4.5 billion is, as I mentioned, a very respectable, impressive number. It's the second highest in our state's history.
Thank you. Senator McGee?
Yes, just quick, just top three products on export value.
Through the chair, Senator, I'm coming to that on my next slide, okay. And I'll show that. At these levels, at $4.5 to $5 billion, this represents about 10% of the state's entire economy, what's called the gross state product. The gross state product in Alaska last year was about $52 billion, with exports being about $4.5 to $5. So it roughly represents about 10% of the state's what would be called a GDP on the national level. It's a GSP when you're talking about a state. Export dollars represent new money coming into the Alaskan economy. It supports thousands of direct and indirect jobs, and I'll talk about that in a moment. The overall result of a strong export economy is a stronger economy overall, a more diversified economy. We get the question of how does Alaska rank? Okay, you're talking about $4.5 billion worth of exports. How does that rank Alaska? Well, in absolute numbers, it ranks us 40th among the states. That may not sound really impressive, but it is when you think of when you look at it a couple other ways. When you think about Alaska having only 700,000 people, when you look at the exports on a per capita basis, Alaska ranks fourth in the nation. So relative to people living in other states, exports matter more actually to us. It has a more of an impact. It's like more likely that your job or your neighbor's job will be tied directly or indirectly to exports. So on that basis, we rank fourth. As a percentage of the gross state product, we rank 14th.
I'm sorry. I just want to add, I think another way we could say that we're strong as far as ranking is our how young of a state we are. I think it's pretty impressive, those second bullets, based on how young we are as a state.
That's a very good point. And also, when you think of the 700,000 people, that's a suburb. Our entire population is really could be a suburb of other major cities around the country and around the world. And yet we're producing almost $5 billion worth of exports with a very small, young population, young state. I dare say I was born here before statehood, and I'm not that old. So we are a young state. And
we all agree with you. You're not that old.
60 is the new 40.
There you go. So why does trade matter? 10% of the GSP. And the numbers that you hear us talk about or you hear others talk about, these are the export values for commodities. So a ton of coal, a pound of salmon, or something like that. Unfortunately, we don't have the numbers, and no one does. The U.S. Department of Commerce hasn't yet figured out a way to accurately collect information on the export of services. So when an Alaskan construction or engineering or oil and gas field service company or environmental service company gets a job, they bid on a job and get it in Canada or in Russia or anywhere in the world, That's an export, but it's hard to calculate because there isn't the same documents and paperwork that goes in when you ship a ton of coal. There's an extensive paper trail. And when someone gets a contract, we often find out about it anecdotally. They tell us in a press release, in an annual report or something like that. But we can tell you this. It is substantial. It's at least $500 million a year, and when I talk about numbers like that, those are the ones we can sort of guesstimate from companies we know are doing work. I'm often told it's much higher than that. It could be as high as $1 billion. So that's the export of our of what we know. It's kind of exciting, particularly for our young people graduating from colleges here and vocational centers, that there's going to be the jobs in those areas like construction, engineering, oil and gas field services. Exports bring about $4 to $5 billion of new money into our economy. In addition to the numbers themselves of $4 to $5 billion, the export revenues, a study done by Northern Economics a couple years ago estimated that export activities generate another $2 billion in induced or indirect economic benefits. So it's not just the revenue coming in from the sale of a commodity. It's all the jobs and all the spending and procurement that goes on around it that also brings benefit. Exports allow companies in Alaska to become larger through expanded markets and customer base. If you think about it, again, a small domestic market, 700,000 people. A company, when it reaches a certain point in its life cycle, they have a certain market share in Alaska. How do they grow it from there? They can either buy their competitor, its population could grow, the economy could grow. But other options include opening an operation or an office or a division in the lower 48, or it may be opening markets overseas. And depending on the product, or depending on the service, for some Alaskan companies, their best bet actually may be growth through overseas markets. Exports equal jobs. I hope this is a takeaway from today's presentation. The same study by Northern Economics calculated about 15,000 direct jobs in Alaska, companies that are individuals that are working for export-related companies, and another 10,000 in the indirect or induced. Export jobs are typically high-paying jobs. The U.S. Census Bureau did a study recently, and they compared export-related jobs to those jobs tied solely to the domestic economy, and they found that export jobs typically pay anywhere from 13% to 16% more. We don't have to look very far around Alaska to see ample evidence that indeed some of the highest-paying jobs in the state are tied to exports. Another question that we get from people is, how many Alaskan companies are there? How many companies in Alaska are actually exporting? The U.S. Department of Commerce has estimated there's about 300 companies who have reported in the export documentation that they are exporting from Alaska. This probably, in some respects, under-reports because, take for example, in the seafood industry, a fish caught here might be shipped directly, say, to a warehouse or a processor in Seattle and then exported. So we don't get credit for that export. But the number 300, we're fairly comfortable with that number. And of those, another question we get is it just the big guys that are successful in exports? I mean, the multinationals, I mean, we anticipate that they'll be successful, but how about everyone else? Well, of these 300, about 75% of them are considered by the Commerce Department as SMEs, small and medium-sized enterprises. That means 500 employees or fewer, which actually accounts for a lot of companies in Alaska. This addresses your question, sir, having to do with what are we exporting? You can see that seafood has been and remains our single largest export commodity. It's typically 50% or slightly more, and last year was no exception, 55%. Minerals is our second largest category, and when we're talking about minerals, we're talking about primarily zinc and lead. Precious metals are just that, silver and gold. Forest products tend to be whole round logs that are sent overseas for processing, and then fish meal. So you can see that we're very much a natural resource exporting state, and these are our top export commodities.
Question, Ms. Hughes?
It appears by that chart that the majority of exports, and you mentioned raw materials, are not do not include value-added production. Are you working with any companies to, or do you, is there interest in our state for that? Because we could get a lot more bang for the buck if we're exporting with value added. So just curious if there's development along those lines, what you're hearing.
Madam Chair, that's a great question, and it's something that's sort of the value added side is sort of the holy grail of economic development, and it's something that all of us in this area, in economic development, and trade is part of economic development. It's very much part of the mix. We are working with some companies who are doing value added processing. I wish there was more of them, and we are certainly able and willing to work with those who are seeking to take a natural resource, a commodity here, process it, package it, somehow add value to it before it gets shipped. There's been examples over the years. One of the good examples of taking a natural resource here was the Agrium, the fertilizer plant down in the Kenai Peninsula for many years that took gas, converted it into fertilizer, and then sold it, then exported. They exported 99%+ of what they produced there.
Representative Hughes has a follow-up, and then we'll go to Representative Grumman, and then Senator Michiki.
I'll pass them.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Wolf. I've become aware of a small value-added producer called Yummy Chummies. I don't know if their exports include international, but I know how crazy Americans are about their dogs. And these folks move their production operation to Arizona, I believe, because of shipping issues. That's a big red flag to me for value-added production in Alaska, where transportation of the finished product to its market becomes an issue. Do you have any information on that, or any ideas about how we could avoid losing valuable businesses like that?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, that is a really key issue for anyone doing value-added processing here, is the shipping costs associated with that, and the need to be competitive against competitors who may not have the same shipping costs. I'm familiar with that case and other cases like that. A number of years ago, I was involved with another organization, and we were able to successfully negotiate a backhaul rate with shippers going from Anchorage, in this case, to Tacoma, to the ports in Seattle. And that helped a lot, having that backhaul rate. The ships come in full, and they go back largely empty. So I don't know if that is possible today. In the 90s, that was possible, but there's different players involved now. But I know that there is some effort to see if something like that is possible. It would have to be beneficial for the companies involved as well. That getting some sort of a efficient backhaul would be a great benefit to companies like that, who are working to add value to a resource here and then sell it to the lower 48 or to the world.
Thank you. Senator Michiki.
There are two questions. Energy, you skipped over that. Is that potentially coal and LNG? Do you have other products as well? And
through the chair, Senator, yeah, I'm sorry. Energy, in that category, it's coal, LNG, and in some years, refined fuel products. There's no petroleum there because we don't export petroleum. But we have exported LNG for many years. Coal is included in that. And then in the years that we export refined fuel products, that's included in the energy category.
Okay. And one more. I mean, you gave some impressive numbers early on, per capita and production. Mm-hmm. However, still challenged. You talked about opportunities for our young people, and clearly an elephant on this chart that should be much larger is forest products. Is World Trade Center involved in trying to improve the outlook for exporting Alaskan timber in the future?
Right. Through the chair, Senator, that's the forest products. I've made this presentation for many years, and the forest product sector has, frankly, been a declining sector in terms of the of export values. A large part of that is problems having to do with access rather than demand. the ability to log. These types of issues, these are supply issues. The people who are exporting tend to be on private lands. Some of the corporations that are exporting whole round logs, they own their own land and are able to log. So that that is a an issue that remains. In the past year, I know we worked with several small companies that take Alaskan forest products and add value to it before it's exported. We helped one with a shipping problem, a customs problem that they ran into in China, and we worked successfully to help them resolve that problem. So we've worked with several value-added processors, woods used, for example, for musical instruments and things like that, that's exported.
Thank you. Follow up.
Just follow up. I'd like some guidance moving forward on getting, seeing what we can do to improve access. Clearly, what was once a thriving industry in Southeast no longer exists, and I'd like to see that change. So I'd like to work with your organization to look at some of the obstacles and hopefully some solutions in the future.
Thank you, Senator. And Representative Higgins, and then, but first, Representative Hughes, did you want to introduce your member?
Yes. For the record, Representative Gaddis has joined us. Thank you.
Getting back to your ranking, I'm just curious on how you guys come across that. And I hope Puerto Rico doesn't take this the wrong way. But, you know, they're ranked 25th in the old 11 census. We're ranked 44th. And my question is Puerto Rico doesn't have a lot of resources. And I know that obviously they're exporting more than we are because they're ranked higher than we are. We have all this resource that we are exporting because we give, you know, everything goes out of our state. So why are we still ranked so low?
Through the chair, Representative Higgins, the numbers, we're ranked 40th. One of the reasons for that is what we don't have to export. Many of the states that are ranked higher have two things that we don't have. They have large manufacturing sectors, which we don't, and they have large agricultural sectors, which we don't. And those, in the absence of those, the fact that we still rank 40th, shipping essentially raw commodities, I think it's a respectable level to that in the absence of a manufacturing sector and an agricultural sector, because those are the leading exports for many states.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. I'm going to make a decision of the chair here. Please write your questions down. We will continue and get through the entire program. We've got a lot of pages to go.
Okay.
And there will be time afterwards to ask all the questions you may have. Mr. Wolf.
Right. Thank you, sir. So who are our customers? This shows by country our top 10 export partners. And what's changed on here, really for the first time in 50 years since statehood, is up until 2011, Japan was our number one trading partner. It was for many, many decades. That changed in 2011 when China surpassed Japan to become our number one partner, and they were also our number one partner last year. So exports to China now exceed those to Japan. South Korea has been a long time top three trading partner. They remain our third largest partner. Our neighbors next door, Canada, is our fourth largest trading partner. These are all Pacific Rim, if you think about it, where they're located, the Pacific Rim. Then you look in the next five. These are primarily European countries. They tend to be, you know, much smaller in volume. They're important, but much smaller in volume. In some cases, they're sort of a single commodity customer. For example, Switzerland. When you drill down on the numbers in Switzerland, you find that what we're exporting to Switzerland almost exclusively is precious metals. Another market may be buying almost all exclusively seafood or something like that. It's the large Asian markets which tend to be the more broad customer, but buying some or in some cases a lot of everything that we have in all categories. So it's really the Pacific Rim accounts for most of our trade. Asia on a typical year accounts for close to 70% of all of our exports. So the big economies in Asia are the big customers for Alaska. This looks back over the past almost two decades of where we've been on exports. And you can see there's only really been two down periods. during this almost 20 years. 1998, you see it dropped off over 500, almost three-quarters of $1 billion. That was the year there was problems in Asia, what's called the Asian contagion, the Asian flu, the Asian economic crisis that started in Southeast Asia. It didn't really affect us till it worked its way to Korea. And then Alaska was impacted. Our exports to Korea dropped substantially. But Korea recovered, as did our exports. So we really only had one down year there. Then if you go forward up until 2008-2009, that's when we dropped off again, and that's, of course, the so-called Great Recession, the economic crisis that we faced, America and the world faced just a few years ago. Other than that, it's been a fairly steady movement, stable or upwards, for the past 20 years. I wish all of our charts looked like this one. This shows our exports to China. I've described this 10-year period as the dragon decade. We've gone from literally, in the year 2000, Alaska's exports were 103 million, and in 2011, they reached 1.4 billion. This is unprecedented. I've been in the business 25 years. We've never seen a market grow this fast to these levels so quickly. So China has become an enormous customer for Alaska. We believe that the next phase of this evolution of our relationship with China, they are already a large customer of Alaska and will remain so. The next phase is them to come to Alaska to partner with us on development projects. We have no inside knowledge or crystal ball on this. All we do is look around. Anywhere in the world, any natural resource jurisdiction around the world, you'll see the Chinese there as customers and increasingly as investors or partners in projects. So just based on what they're doing everywhere else, it's conceivable that they could come to Alaska, and they are already an important customer. What do we export to China? Seafood is the largest commodity of exports, about 60%, then minerals. Forest products, which are whole round logs. What's not in here and will show up next year is precious metals. For example, from the mine here outside of Juneau, the Kennecott mine, about 50% of the production of that goes directly to China. And so they're a customer, of really a well-rounded customer of all of our commodities. How did we get to where we are? And what trends are impacting us today and tomorrow? I refer to these as the three rights. Alaska is in the right place geographically. We're on the right place on the map. We're located on the Pacific Rim. It's not a faraway place. We're on the Pacific Rim. We're a neighbor on the Pacific Rim. This puts us as a neighbor to the fastest growing economies in the world and among the fastest growing populations in the world. That's not a bad place to be. We're also at the right time in history. Economic liberalization and modernization is changing the economic picture. And two trends that are affecting that as a result of this economic liberalization and modernization is the migration of people from the rural parts of these countries in these emerging markets to the cities. Lured by jobs and opportunities to improve their standard of living, they're moving in record numbers from the rural parts of their country in India and China and other places to the cities. This is a unique time in history. McKinsey and Company, the well-known international consulting firm, has projected by the year 2025, just in another 12 years or so, China will add 400 million people. 400 million people, that's greater than the population of the United States. 400 million people will move from the rural parts of the country to the urban centers. Whole new cities basically are being created. They estimate that India will see about 215, 220 million people move from the rural parts of the country into the cities. The same report notes that this is unprecedented. The mass movement of people from the countryside to the cities hasn't happened before like this. The report notes that never before in history have two of the largest nations in terms of populations urbanized at the same time and at such a rapid pace. This is playing into Alaska's favor. Also, people moving into the cities, having jobs, there's millions of people that are becoming consumers for the first time. The Brookings Institute reports just in a five-year period between 2005 and 2010, sustained economic growth in emerging markets around the world has enabled nearly a half a billion people to rise from poverty up into the consuming classes. This is good news for Alaska because it drives the demand for commodities. And Alaska has world-class reserves of natural resources, and what we're selling is not the latest Gucci watch or the latest technical device. We're selling what I would call the building blocks of economic development. We are selling what people need versus what they want. So these things, we're at the right place geographically. We're at the right time in history, really an unprecedented. It's happening right around us every day, an unprecedented time in history, and it's driving demands for exactly what we sell, which is commodities. So this drives my optimism. So why am I optimistic? Just very quickly, we have what the world needs. We have the fastest growing economies and populations in our own backyard. Other developments, for example, commercial development of the Arctic, represent some new opportunities for Alaska with increased shipping, the need for infrastructure, the access to resources that were previously inaccessible. There's a lot in our future which could lead us to the forthright. We could be heading the right direction, heading north. Other reasons for my optimism is that while we've achieved the level that we have at about $5 billion, and natural resources, including metals and minerals, are one of our largest commodity exports, we've really just touched the surface. Take coal, for example. It's estimated that, and depending on which type of reserves you're counting, I've seen the number anywhere from 12 to 20, but this number is used by the Commonwealth North. 17% of the world's coal is in Alaska. If we were a country, this would be the second most in the world. Copper, we have 6% of the world's copper. That would rank us third in the world. Lead, we rank sixth in the world. Gold, seventh in the world. Zinc, eighth in the world. And silver, eighth in the world. So we have, and if you think about coal, for example, with 17% of the world's coal, how many coal mines do we have in Alaska? Only one that I know of. So there's lots of room for growth. And this, of course, we haven't exported a single drop of our North Slope natural gas, which could be a huge export. Looking ahead, we don't do a lot of forecasting, but we're looking at the current year that we're in to be along the same levels, to be at a similar pace to the year that just passed. So we think we'll end up at the end of the year, when I'm here maybe next year, we'll be reporting about 4.5 to 4.7 billion, barring any unforeseen black swan on the upside or the downside. The things to watch are the values, the prices that we're getting for commodities, because that's what we're exporting. Watch the dollar. This is a secular trend, nothing new here. The dollar's been in a long-term secular decline for many years. This actually, it's a double-edged sword, but it also makes U.S. dollar-based exports, like what we have, cheaper to those countries where their currencies are strengthening. So watch the dollar, and then finally watch the Pacific Rim economies. Mainly watch China, Japan, and Korea, our largest customers, for strengths and weakness. The better they're doing, the better we'll be doing. Just in wrapping up, the Trade Center, as I mentioned, is a private nonprofit corporation. We provide services to the business community and to our community partners. Our mission is to help them compete successfully for trade and investment in the global marketplace. And our Trade Center is part of the global network. There's about 300 trade centers around the world, and we are one of them, and this is our 26th year. These are just the functions that I won't go into them, but these are things that we do on a daily basis, working with companies to help them become export ready. We do conferences, we do seminars, we do trade missions, we do a lot of work like that. We do research in foreign markets, identifying opportunities for Alaska companies. We do one-on-one trade counseling. We worked sort of a matchmaking to connect Alaskan sellers with overseas buyers. For the small and medium-sized companies, we make our offices and our infrastructure available to them. And of course, then there's the World Trade Center network, 300 offices they can access around the world. One of our functions is trade missions. It's what we call the boots on the ground strategy. And these are photos of some of the mission members in Hong Kong on the far left, in Beijing in the middle, and in New Delhi, India, there on the bottom right. In the past 10 years, we've taken groups to China, Korea, India, Taiwan, Singapore, and others. Like all organizations, we have to focus our work, focus our resources. These are our five major programs. Four of them are country-specific, a Japan program, a China program, a Canada program, and a Korea program. And then looking for the next market for Alaska, who's going to be the next, which country will be the next Korea for us? So we have a program called New Markets, New Customers. So we're looking at other markets, India, for example, as a potential emerging opportunity for Alaska. And I do want to recognize that we don't do this work alone. We do so in partnership with all our long-term strategic partners, which are the State of Alaska, the University of Alaska, and the U.S. Department of Commerce, the Commercial Service, and with the help of you and this body, the legislature. So with that, I'll conclude my remarks, and if there's time for questions, I'm happy to take them.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. Pleasure to have you here. I really appreciate you taking the time. Representative Hughes.
Yes, and thank you, Chairman. I think you were wise in curtailing your questions, but it's a good sign because it shows we're engaged and interested. Do you see any products that are in demand in other countries that there's potential where we could develop that, and when you have the pie chart showing the different things going out, or possibly there could be a new piece of that pie? And then along with that, do you have a long-range plan that you're working on to move Alaska toward greater exporting?
Madam Chair, I'll take the first question first. About what other categories or what could we be exporting that we aren't currently? There is demand, for example, around the world, and it's growing by the day. And in some places, it's valued even more than a barrel of oil, and that would be a gallon or a barrel of potable water. Drinking water. Alaska is blessed with an abundant supply of water of the drinkable kind, and that is becoming increasingly scarce around the world, and that's an opportunity. There are several companies in Alaska that are not only bottling the water, but are finding export markets for that water, and it's one of those things where sometimes people have conceptions or preconceptions about Alaska. But something like that makes sense to people when they think about a cold place, probably you know, a pristine environment. All of those things, some of the marketing is done for you. In respect, that's what people think about Alaska. So there's opportunities in things like that. We don't know yet, but there's private sector companies, and I think last year the state provided some funding to do an inventory of rare earth elements. We could, in the ground below us, we could have enormous reserves of very valuable, very critical technical metals, you might say, that are needed for technology. Alaska could be a major supplier in the future of those. But we won't know yet until these sort of feasibility, sort of the inventory has been done. But that's being pursued both at the governmental level and also by private sector companies seeking to develop a mining operation. So there are opportunities. There are markets that are new markets that could open up. There's markets for some of the high value sort of seafood, sort of the specialty products like in seafood that where the best opportunities for them are in overseas markets where there's a high demand for those, consumer demand. There's opportunities to take what we're doing and do more of it in these categories that already exist, of course. As I mentioned, in some cases, we've just begun to develop those resources. It's possible that if we do the right things, if we're allowed to responsibly develop what we know we have, that we'll look back a few years at these $5 billion levels, and it'll seem like a small number. So I'm very optimistic. I think there's much more ahead of us than behind us, and there's a lot of opportunities. And I look forward to working with the members of these committees and your colleagues to pursue those.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. I'm going to take questions as we can. Senator Gardner, can you stay until after the 12 o'clock
yes,
hour?
Yes, I can.
Would you mind if we went on to Senator McGuire, who has to leave in about a minute?
Thank you so much. I have a question for you, if you can answer it quickly, because then I want to make a comment to the committee just about you and about things that I think the committee should look for. My question is about efforts in India. When we went on our trade mission, they were interested in coal and LNG, and I wanted to know if they'd followed back up with you on those two points.
I do know that they are interested in those commodities. There has been some follow up,
okay.
And perhaps we could talk about that. But that's an opportunity. We're thinking of the Indian market generally, which has tremendous opportunities. It has a growing economy, just slightly growing at a slightly slower pace than China. So China gets on page one, India's growth is on page two. But they have enormous needs for natural resources, enormous needs for infrastructure build out, and Alaska can play a part in that.
Okay, and then I just want to make a point really quickly to the members of this committee. Senator Stevens and I have served on this committee before and so on, but I see some new members, and I just want to emphasize what good work Greg Wolf does. I've worked with him now, and so has Gary, now 13 years of his 15 years through many different administrations, and what a non-political person he is. He works with all of the administrations so well, but how unique this entity is that we have and how different it is from the Department of Community and Economic Development, but complementary. And as we move forward, this committee has an opportunity to be in an advocate position, I would just say, for all of the things that promote trade. And to that end, to encourage the partnering, there have been some administrations where I would say there's more of a natural partnership and others where there could be tension and not as much of a natural partnership. And this particular group of people who are pro-export, pro-trade, can kind of help massage that because they fill different roles. And in particular, what Greg and his group is doing with those 300 member organizations is really helping that business person who comes in and doesn't know how to reach out. You know, I've got bottled water. How in the heck do I reach an India market? Or I've got silver, how do I do it? And that's not really something that if you think about an administrative function, you could sort of walk into, you know, the giant tower there in Anchorage and say, you know, which commissioner could help me do this? So I just make a shout out to him and his efforts on a very shoestring budget for what he does, and to really encourage you to go around and talk to each individual member about how we can support you and generate, you know, more interest in what you're doing.
Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease while the Senate does a hasty retreat.
The meeting back together, and Senator Gardner had a question, so we'll start off with you.
Thank you. If we could scroll back up, and I think it's page 10, maybe 11. Let me find my question now. It's about China's exports, Alaska's exports to China by commodity. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned here that the next phase in development is for China to come here as partners.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, what do we need from them in a partnership? Do they bring capital? Do they bring enhanced access to markets? That's it.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, I would say they bring both of those things. If you look around other natural resource jurisdictions around the world, when they come in as a partner, investor, their relationship takes different forms, each sort of a case-by-case example. But coming in to invest in a project, almost all projects always need capital, and they have capital in abundance. Their sovereign wealth fund, for example, they have several of them, but one of them at least is, it's either the first or second largest in the world, hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars for investment, seeking investment. These funds, if you think of it sort of as a permanent fund on steroids, where I think our permanent fund is like in $36 billion range. Some of these Chinese are like $300 billion. And they're investing in natural resource projects, among other things, around the world. So, that, yes, they can bring capital. They also bring the customer base with them. They are now the biggest importer of a lot of natural resources from around the world. For example, in zinc, which we have the world's largest zinc mine at Red Dog, and China as a nation is the world's largest importer of zinc. So they they're sort of a natural fit, not only with China but with other Asian countries where they are essentially resource poor and we are resource rich. Now, in a case like China, some people are curious about, well, why would they be buying some of these natural resources like coal and others when they have their own supplies of coal? But oftentimes they're not, their coal is not located near the population centers. So, and there are sometimes transportation issues, lacking the infrastructure to get it from there to where they really need it. And so oftentimes it's more economical to import it. And they do. In some other cases, they just don't, they have resources, but just not enough of them. Again, that drives their demand. But their growth, you know, they've gone through a period really unprecedented, about 30 years in a row of double-digit growth. I don't know if this has ever happened before. So their demands are continuing, they're ongoing, and they're growing as more and more people have more and more income. They're going to need those things that are made from natural resources.
Thank you.
Thank you. Greg, I was I'm going to take you back to my earlier question, and we were moving along towards noon for the other senators to leave, so I didn't wave my hand again. But I had asked a question regarding whether you have a long-range plan that you work off of, and if you could please address that, because I didn't hear that in the earlier response. I had a two-part question, and you did great with the first part, but if you could address that.
Okay,
part.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'm sorry that I didn't answer the second part of your question. In terms of a long-term plan, there's two areas that we're looking at. One is, as an organization, sort of internal in terms of a strategic plan, if you will, our board of directors is in the process of developing a 10-year plan now as we speak, and so that is in progress, looking out as an organization our plan for the next decade or so. In terms of our focus, in terms of our work, we are spending an increasing amount of time. We've been beating the China drum for a long time, and when we were early with the call on China. Sometimes it's nice to be right, and this one worked out very well for it became, at the time when we started with our China efforts, taking groups of Alaskans to China. We do an annual China conference, and this is in the eighth year. We just completed our eighth Alaska-China business conference, bringing in China specialists, U.S. specialists for trade, to really focus attention on the opportunities and challenges of doing business in and with the Middle Kingdom. We've had a lot of focus on China for the past decade. We're looking out now at emerging markets in Southeast Asia, ASEAN markets. We talk about this in the February edition of Alaska Business Monthly. There's a special 22-page section about international trade. It's not out. I don't know if it's on the newsstands yet, but I have copies of it in your folders. And there's a several-page article about opportunities for Alaska in ASEAN markets, Southeast Asian markets. And so we're looking at emerging markets as an opportunity. In addition to our well-established markets now in Japan and Korea and Canada, some of these are what we call traditional partners. We've been doing business with them for 30, 40, 50 years. Other opportunities, like we mentioned, India is one. There may be others. What we're trying to do is take a top-down approach where we look at a country that's growing. First of all, are they growing? We're looking for growth economies, okay? A country's growing. Then we try to analyze their import needs and how they match up with Alaska's export capabilities. Do we have what they need? Okay, so if it's growing and we have what they need, then, you know, which specific industries, can our companies be competitive? And then how do we help them access those markets? So we take a top-down approach to identifying new markets, and that's part of the process.
Thank you. And just as a follow-up to that, you mentioned that the board is working on a strategic plan 10-year and more of an internal document.
Yes.
Do you have something where you're looking out 50 years for Alaska, where Alaska could be? And I know there are a lot of factors that can change, circumstantial, but thinking of something like the timber industry, which could be developed to a greater extent, the fact that you know that there's a need for these technical metals. Mm. So do you have any kind of an external plan for Alaska is how it will fit in over 20, 30, 50 years?
We have a lot of ideas, Madam Chair. We do have a lot of ideas. I don't know if we have formalized them and say put them into a document as such, but it's certainly, you know, it's something that we'd be interested and willing to do, working with our partners at the state of Alaska and with our partners at the university and with Commerce. These are our long-term strategic partners. I think through those partnerships, that type of plan which I think is a great idea, is something that could happen.
I would encourage that because I think even at the state level, we need to be looking out that far. And so as a follow-up to that, the need for infrastructure in our young state definitely would help in your sector. Do you have any kind of are you involved in any conversations at a formal level where you give input into the infrastructure that is needed in Alaska to help with world trade?
Madam Chair, yeah, I think that we offer input when we're asked, when that information is sought from us, no doubt about that. In forums like this, when questions come up from lawmakers, from leaders, from the business community, we certainly participate. You pointed out something that is a real important issue, and that is, it's one thing to have all of these world-class reserves of all of these resources, for example, but if you can't get them to market, they're stranded, if you will. So access to these resources, so you can move them from the source to Tidewater and ultimately to the customers, having the infrastructure, whether it's a rail, whether it's a highway, whether it's a port, the answer is we need all of those things, and we don't have many of them because we're a young state. We have a lot of catching up to do relative to the rest of America, so that we can have access to these resources and where they can become commercialized.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And I've asked some very broad questions, and I have a rather specific question, but I just had someone in my office the other day, so I'm going to ask it. And that is, there's a proposal to designate the Susitna area as a Susitna forest, and part of that, it feeds into Senator Michikee's question about the expansion of the timber industry. Have you heard anything from, in your area where that is a good thing and would be helpful as far as timber exports?
Madam Chair, I admit I have not had, I have not engaged in conversations about that. I will gladly look into it to learn more about it. But I really can't comment on it. I'm just not familiar enough with the issue.
Okay, thank you. That's good. Do any of the other members have any questions? Representative Drummond.
I'm trying to kind of get the high-level view, and I'm acting in total sponge mode here and trying to drink from the fire hose that is the information that's coming at me. There is a proposal, and in fact I think it's quite active, to build the railroad from the north end to the Point McKenzie port.
Mm-hmm.
How is that going in terms of, and its prime function is going to be to get coal to the port.
Well,
Is that funded? Is it actually proceeding?
It's moving forward. In fact, there was just a news item today or yesterday about getting over another legal hurdle. So I think it's moving forward. Do you have any comments on that, Greg?
Madam Chair, no, I'm familiar with this. I think you're referring to the spur line that mm-hmm. they're seeking to develop mm-hmm. that would connect by rail right directly to Port McKenzie. My understanding is, of course, it could be it could play a big role in coal exports, but not just coal exports. There's a lot of other minerals and such, other resources that could move along the rails. I've seen presentations where they're talking about a good number of both expanding existing export operations and then also developing some new ones. But what requires the transportation mode. But I think most of the projects, in my experience, and perhaps this has been yours as well, most greenfield projects in Alaska require two critical things. One is power, and one is transportation. Mm-hmm. And those two things really drive whether or not a project will happen.
Thank you. And before I follow up, I'd just let the record show that Representative Tarr has joined us. Representative Drummond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know it's a small project as far as China is concerned, but when you mentioned that China has an abundance of capital, maybe there's a way for them to help us build that railroad since we're in a money crunch in terms of capital projects. And it's a short... This is a short spur. I mean, what is it, 40 or 50 miles, maybe? Is it that long? I'm sorry, I'm not that familiar with the projects in your districts.
I'm not sure. Of
I am, and 50 is closer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have any comments on that, particularly the idea of foreign investment for something like that?
Well, you know, Madam Chair, through the Chair, Representative Drummond, the you mentioned Chinese investment or other countries that could and do invest in Alaska. Actually, Alaska has been very successful in attracting foreign capital. It's not often discussed. It's not often written about. We've done a pretty good job of talking about it publicly and producing articles and reports on it. But what's called FDI, foreign direct investment, which would be the U.S. subsidiaries of foreign companies investing here. The U.S. Department of Commerce actually keeps track of all that. And Alaska ranks in the top 10 in the nation for attracting foreign capital, FDI. Cumulatively, and that's how they measure it, cumulatively. So it's not all in one year. It's cumulative over many years. We've attracted about $34 billion to Alaska from the U.S. subsidiaries of foreign companies. So you have investment by the Japanese, by the Canadians, by the British. It's a variety of countries. Three or four in particular stand out. But we've been successful in that. While we can pat ourselves on the back for the success that we've had, and we've done that, the investments haven't been like where in other states might have a Toyota plant or some sort of electronics factory or something. This has been investment in natural resource development, mm-hmm. almost exclusively. Few exceptions. But we've done so, like I say, in the absence of those typical investments that you find. So while we can pat ourselves on the back for the success that we've had, I note that a lot of that investment is historic. In other words, it happened 20 or 30 years ago. And so it reminds us that we need to remain competitive as a destination for capital. Capital goes to where it's treated the best. And capital these days flows anywhere and everywhere in the world. And it goes and it stays where it's treated the best. So our need to remain competitive to attract this foreign investment, whether domestic or foreign investment, but in my area it's the foreign investment that we look at, is the need to always remain competitive and to always make sure that we are keeping in that attractive mode so that companies will look at making these big investments. And these tend to be the big investments. In the state.
And we do need those new dollars, or what's called primary dollars, not just recycled and floating around the ones we already have. Representative Gaddis.
You mentioned three or four projects that stood out. Granted, they were 20 years ago. What were those that stood out?
Well, the largest single one is the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, the investment by British uh-huh. Petroleum at that point, BP. Is in the billions of dollars. their investments, for example, in their share of the pipeline, their investment in North Slope. You look at Canadian investment, like, for example, in the mining industry. They are a big player. The Canadians are a big player in two ways. When you look at when we look at FDI, we're talking about an actual investment in a hard asset, an actual building, a pipeline, a infrastructure. It's not the money spent exploring, not the looking around. That still brings enormous benefits to us. Mm-hmm. If you look at the minerals report that the state produces each year, they have a chapter on exploration, and the chapter shows year by year how many dollars were spent looking around the state for minerals and metals. And then there's usually a description about which companies were looking. And in some cases, 90% in a given year, as high as 90% has been Canadian companies. So they're a big player in the exploration side. And then they also operate some of our largest mines. So they've actually made the investment, in some cases, in the actual mines themselves. So there's the investment. They have Japanese investment. For example, they're also in the mining business with their investment in Pogo. Sumitomo Metals operates the Pogo mine, a very successful gold mine. They also have investments in seafood processing plants. Mm-hmm. So Alaska has been a very attractive place for companies to come and invest. FDI is important because I think it says three things about us. When these companies, which are typically multinational companies, choose Alaska, they do so based on their understanding, their belief that they can operate a business profitably here. It's also based on the sort of positive business environment, the attractive business environment. It's also, a positive vote for the quality of our workforce. They obviously, these projects need workers, and so I think it's a vote of confidence, not only in our business environment, but also in the quality of our workforce.
Okay, I have one concluding question, but before I ask that, I just want to draw your attention that you have a letter, the House members do anyway, responding to some questions we had on the ARDR program. And then before I ask a good concluding question, do any other members have any questions for Greg? Okay, so here's a good wrap-up for you that would be helpful to us as legislators. Are there any statutes or regulations that inhibit your ability to further the international economic development that we need to be participating in here in Alaska? Can you think of anything that would be helpful for us to know along those lines?
Madam Chair, if I could, that would warrant, some thought and a chance to sort of reflect on that. If you're talking about current legislation that's on the table or legislation that might be proposed,
I would include potential.
Okay, if we could come back to you with a response to that, we would be happy to.
And I'm guessing just from your earlier comments, anything we can do to strengthen our infrastructure in the state, as you mentioned, transportation is always key, and to work towards affordable power so that those Alaskans can develop those businesses that could participate in world trade. So with that, we are ready to wrap up. Oh, well, good news. Good news. We have been probably one of the committees that started meeting together here on the House side from the get-go. We didn't hesitate at all. We haven't taken a break, and so I just let you know that Thursday you do get a little break. So we will not be meeting Thursday. And with that, it is now 12:22, and the EDTT committee is adjourned. Thank you.